Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., all rights reserved.
Sarah Calvert is our good friend and our special guest this hour. She's been with us many times before. She's the principal in Calvert & Associates, P.C., a law firm she started in 1991. She attended Mary Washington College in Fredericksburg, Virginia, for her undergraduate degree in economics and international business, and she received her law degree from George Mason University Law School. She's also a member of the Central Fairfax Chamber of Commerce. Sarah, welcome back to the show.
Thank you very much.
And Sarah has prepared quite a number of different programs that she delivers around the area for small business, and one of them is 101 Ways to Avoid Liability in Your Business, and we've been doing a series on that. She's been gracious enough to join us for 1 hour a week as we move through the series, and we're a little over halfway through, I think. And Sarah, today's discussion is about leases.
Leases, office space.
Yeah.
Yep, it works two ways. You either start, a lot of my businesses are out of their home. Some of my, multi-million dollar businesses are out of their home. That always, always boggles my mind.
Well, you know, one of the things that I get the most, I'd say one of the top, not the top, but one of the top questions that I get in email from clients is about leasing.
Yeah, and there's so much. It's probably the first big commercial contract that many people sign. It's the first time that they are faced with something that's probably totally foreign to them because it's not at all like a residential lease.
And you know what happens, and of course, today, folks, what we're going to talk about are leases with other people and leases with yourself. We're going to talk about both of those. But, you know, Sarah, one of the things that happens, I think, is we got this small business dreamer. They've been working on this idea in their head for a long time. Maybe they've even been doing it a little bit part-time at home and that sort of thing. And all of a sudden they decide, you know, I'm going to do it. I'm going to have my own storefront. They found a location that's perfect, et cetera, et cetera. And the idea of having their own business with their name on the wall, their name on the sign, and all that, customers coming in, that's just the most wonderful thing that they can imagine. And so they go down and they sign this lease without even reading it.
Oh, my goodness.
It's amazing. I know you've seen that before. I have.
And commercial leases are some of the worst contracts in the world to read when I can't sleep at night. I pull out a good commercial contract and read it to put myself straight to sleep. So.
But you've seen that, haven't you?
Oh, I've seen it all the time. And what's worse is the first mistake that person made is in falling in love with a particular location. That to me is the killer of trying to negotiate a decent deal with a landlord. You should find two or three spaces first.
Absolutely.
That would meet and suit your needs, which you should have written down before you even went to look at property. It's kind of like buying a house, if you've ever done the search for the house.
Well,
but
see,
it's more important.
Here's the thing that happens, though. See, when the other two experiences that this person that I'm talking about had was one, when they got out of college, or while they were in college maybe, they rented an apartment, and the biggest thing they had to worry about was, is he going to let me have a pet or not? You know, and who cleans up when I leave? You know,
typically
apartment leases are not that egregious.
No.
All right, number two, the next thing that they did along those lines with real estate was they bought a house.
Mm-hmm.
And when they bought a house, they had a realtor and they had an attorney and maybe somebody else to help them through this process.
Right. And there is a good professional involved in this situation. There are wonderful commercial realtors out there, but you have to understand who they represent at this point.
Yep.
They make more money the more you pay rent because they're paid by the landlord and not by you. Even though they took you around, even though they told you this was a good deal and this wasn't a good deal, and this, you know, what's going on historically with this particular retail strip or office building, they have all the information, but that's used to the benefit of their pocketbook. And
well, and let's be fair about it. It's not their job to protect your business and to protect you. It's not their job to presume what you need and what you don't need.
Right, exactly.
And it's not their job to presume whether you really need to be there for a year or 5 years.
Right, but it's so often the real estate agent appears to be so helpful and friendly to you, and actually is. I mean, it's to their benefit that you sign a lease somewhere, so they will, of course, be as helpful and friendly as they can. But you need to understand that their advice and their negotiations are not arm's length with the landlord.
That's
they have
right.
a vested interest in you paying the most amount of rent so they get the highest commission.
Right. And for you to think that they are going to negotiate for your best interest, you've created essentially a conflict of interest.
Well, that's right. That's right. So that's why I really and truly believe that there is a lot to be done with an attorney helping you to negotiate this, or with somebody who's been with this, through this before. There's a few tricks to the trade that most attorneys know, and most people who've never signed or have only signed maybe one or two commercial leases don't know to ask for. When I'm given a commercial lease, which runs anywhere from 10 for a really simple one to 50 pages, you know, legal size pages, small tiny prints, there are probably 6 to 8 pages worth of changes that I'm going to ask for. Some I'm going to routinely be denied on. Some are going to be accepted. Every once in a while, someone says, sure, you can have all of that. And I jump up and down and cheer. Mm-hmm. And that's why I keep asking for them, because every once in a while, someone gives them all to me. But there are a lot of things that can be changed to make a commercial lease less onerous.
What's an example?
Well, for example, there's who takes care of what in a commercial lease is extremely important. You're often asked to have, if you have your own air conditioning and heating system within your unit, you're asked to have maintenance and things like that. But a lot of times they'll make you responsible for the piping and, you know, the plumbing piping and the electrical circuitry in your unit, which is usually common to many, many other units. I like to shift that back to the landlord because, frankly, getting up in the ceilings and the walls and the roof in order to make these kinds of repairs is something that's an overall project that the landlord is best to undertake, as opposed to the client who's only got a piece of those, you know, pipes and electrical conduits.
Well, typically, aren't there are three kind of, sort of levels of a lease. There's the net lease, the net-net lease, and the triple net lease.
Right.
Typically, and that's what I call them anyway.
I was going to say, we usually in this area we see triple net leases, and then we see full service leases that'll include like janitorial services and things like
right.
that. That's a typical office.
But a net lease typically is where the landlord covers everything, but you pay the rent and probably your utilities if the building's wired for you to pay your,
right.
own,
mm-hmm.
your own utilities. Sarah, stand by. We're going to take a break. Folks, it's 20 after. I'm Jim Blassingham, the Small Business Advocate. Do you have a question about a lease? Have one of the experts on the show with us right now. Give us a call, 888-822-8255. When we come back, we're going to get Sarah to tell us more about this triple net lease thing. Stay with us. All right, we're back. It's 24 after. Thank you very much for joining us. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, and Sarah Calvert is our special guest. Sarah is an attorney, and her practice focuses on small business issues, and she absolutely puts her money where her mouth is. I know that she spends most of her time dealing with small business and is very helpful to them. Sarah, how would someone contact you if they wanted to?
Well, if they want to call me, they can call me at 800-526-5665. Just tell me that you heard me on Jim's show, and I'd be happy to chat with you.
All right.
And if you want to reach me locally in Northern Virginia, it's 703-591-5315. And we've entered the technological age. You can check out my website at Calvert, C-A-L-V-E-R-T, and associates.com.
All right.
All spelled out.
Good. Thank you, Sarah. Sarah, we're talking about leases, folks, and Sarah and I were talking about the different levels of a lease. And really, the names that we give it are just kind of for convenience sake. A net lease, when I think of a net lease, I think of a lease where basically you pay the rent and consumables, like your own electricity, but not maintenance, not if the compressor goes out or if the roof leaks or something like that. You don't pay for that. That's what I call a basic net lease. And, Sarah, you're saying that you don't think you see that many of those today.
No, in our area where there's a lot, where there's very few, very little office space available. We're really near capacity in the Northern Virginia into the D.C. and Maryland area. What we mostly see are triple net leases in retail strips and in commercial settings that are at all on the main thoroughfares. The only time I see a full, I call what you're talking about a full service lease, meaning that the landlord does everything except maybe, as you say, utilities. We see that in interior office buildings, condominiums usually.
Mm-hmm.
And it's different. The different parts of the country, some of them call them different things. I've had people call me from other states and say, you know, what about this kind of lease? I'm thinking, what is that? You know, maybe in your part of the country, that's what they call it. But here
well,
we call
a high rise, but if you're talking about, for example, if you're in an office building,
right.
That building may not have been wired so that they know what your utilities are.
Well, that's correct. That pushes people towards the triple net. So,
mm-hmm.
and the triple net sometimes can be a real, even though it seems like a bargain, it can be a real downer for the tenant because basically everything's been pushed back to you. So you pay the real estate taxes of the landlord. You pay, you know, this is the landlord's investment, but you're paying the taxes on it.
For example, let's keep it simple. Sure. Let's say that it's a freestanding building.
Okay.
Let's just say it's a freestanding building. You've rented it, and you're in the process of leasing it. Well, if you have a triple net lease, then basically if it is a true, strictly interpreted triple net lease in the strict interpretation, then the landlord pays nothing but the debt service on the property.
That's right.
You'll pay for the utilities, you'll pay for the maintenance, you'll pay for the ad valorem tax, the whole thing.
You will sweep the streets, you will plow the snow, you will keep the parking lot clear.
If a bulb goes out, you don't call the landlord.
No.
Now, the thing about it, though, is that can be a good thing if you are able to negotiate the base lease and to be discounted to the point where you can justify that.
And the other good thing about those kinds of leases is it certainly pays you to do it if you have an option to buy the property.
Yeah.
And basically, you've maintained the property. You know what the property's like. If you're given either a first right of refusal or you pay a little bit of money for an option, if you really like the space, then that's something that a triple net is very beneficial in that situation.
But if you're in the process of buying this, releasing this building, and this is the one you're in love with, remember, I mentioned earlier,
you fall in love
with this thing, and you sign this lease, and then all of a sudden you move in, and the roof leaks. And what you find out is that in the lease it says that the tenant is responsible for repairing the roof.
Mm-hmm.
And this roof needs a lot of work.
Well, you know, it's just like buying a house if you're going into a triple net lease. There's no reason why you shouldn't have a commercial building inspector come out and take a look at the roof, take a look at the electrical wiring.
Cost you a couple hundred bucks.
Yeah, yeah. It's wonderful insurance. They will also tell you about the real life of what's left of the roof, what's left of the compressor and the air conditioner, what's left of the lighting and electrical fixtures. They can tell you how long these things should expect to work. So that you may say, there's only 5 years useful life before I'm going to have to replace either the roof or the air conditioning unit. So I'm only going to take a 5-year term on
mm-hmm.
this. Just like you would buy a house, you would never buy a house without having somebody inspect it and see what's going on with it. You should never take a look at a valuable piece of commercial property that you're going to be responsible for without having some indication of what the status and what the condition of the place is.
Most people, when they buy a house, ask the previous owner what the utility bill was for that house on the average.
Right.
Do the same thing for a lease.
It's very different because your business and another business may have vastly different needs for electricity.
That's exactly right.
Yes.
Stand by. It's 29 after. We're going to take a break. Sarah Cowart will be with us the rest of the hour. We're talking about leasing office space. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. Our phone number is 888-822-8255. Give us a call. We'll be right back. Welcome back, heroes. It's 33 after. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. My website is www.smallbusinessadvocate.com. Just remember the name of the show. Put the normal stuff on the front and the back. Thank you very much for your business. Sarah Cowart is our special guest this hour, and she is a member of the Brain Trust. She is an attorney who focuses her practice, I should say, on small business. Is that the right way to say it,
Sarah? Unfortunately, the bar associations of most states hate the word specialized.
So I can't use specialized anymore.
Can't use specialized.
Focuses her
emphasize, we focus.
words.
That's right.
We've been talking about leases, folks, and you know, you say tomato, I say tomato. You say net, I say net. You say full service.
Right.
The main thing that we want to get across to people today is when you're negotiating a lease, realize that there are a lot of different things that have to be paid for in the lease besides just the rent payment. And what you want to know is what are all those things, because it could be a little different from one building to the other. If this building has a lake beside it that's part of the ambiance of the thing, who pays for the maintenance of the lake?
Lakes can be expensive.
Exactly, all that kind of stuff. So find out what has to be paid for in addition to the normal stuff that has to be paid for in a building, and then ask this simple question of each one of those, who pays for what?
And there's somebody else that's very important to ask questions of before you sign a commercial lease, and that's the other tenants that are already in the building that are
Absolutely.
Already experiencing the management of that particular landlord. Something that I advise all the time, and many of my clients think they can shortcut, and they find out to their detriment that they couldn't, was going from tenant to tenant to tenant and saying, how do you like the building? Is there anything you'd like to change about it? Is there something you wish the landlord would do? Is there something you wish the landlord wouldn't do?
And you don't have to make a production out of that.
No.
Up one day without anybody knowing what you're doing, and just walk up and say, "I want to speak to the person who rents this office space," and just say, "Hey, I'm thinking about renting an office in this area."
Right. I'm going to open a business, and people are thrilled to help new people.
Yeah,
they really are.
Yeah.
Unless you're a direct competitor.
You don't have to say I'm going to be across the hall from you. Just say I'm thinking about renting some space in this area. What do you like about this building? What do you not like about it? What would you do differently? They'll spill their guts.
Yep. They people love to talk about what's going on in their particular business. That's how you get a sales call started with any small business owner. You say, "So how'd you get into this business?" And 4 hours later, whatever's happens.
And look, take notes.
Yeah.
Write down some of the things that they say. What would you do differently? Or you know, you'll find out whether the landlord is a reasonable person or not. You'll find out whether the landlord is a crook or a nice person. You'll find out whether. You know what else? You'll find out whether the building may be about to be sold.
Well, or the landlord, more importantly, the landlord may be the cheapest person that ever came down the pike, and the place is really going to show it sometime soon.
Yeah.
It's the landlords that don't reinvest in their property that we kind of got to watch out for.
Yeah, that's exactly
they're
right.
That are milking the property rather than taking care of the property.
Now, but one point I want to make, Sarah, before we leave the other subject about who pays for what, just remember this, the more you pay for in expenses outside of the lease payment, the lower your lease payment should be.
Yeah, and you should be able to compare those around the area in which you're looking.
And this is a critical point because comparing the way to compare is square foot annual rent,
mm-hmm.
isn't it?
Yeah, that is. Yeah, you'll hear numbers, and a lot of times people are like, "Oh, good, $13 a square foot." So that means, it sounds like a very low number. But in fact, that's $13 per square foot, and that's done on an annualized basis. So,
right.
it's interesting to run up the calculations.
But if you've got a guy who's wanting to lease you a building for $13 a square foot, and that's a full service lease.
Well, then that's all you pay.
Yeah, that's pretty much all you pay. Maybe you have to. Maybe that's full service, but you pay utilities.
Right.
Well, you've got to come up with what your utilities are, and I want to make sure you pointed that out too, Sarah.
Right.
Because
you'll hear that magic word CAM charges in our area, which is common area maintenance. That's a big chunk they're going to add on top, based upon the percentage of the building that you're in. That's going to include the utilities. We call CAM, it's basically everything for a triple net lease.
Mm-hmm.
And that'll include all of the charges by the landlord, including usually a hefty service fee on top of that for the landlord to manage the property.
You actually probably ought to you should prepare a little financial model on an electronic spreadsheet.
Mm-hmm.
If you can't do it, get someone to do it for you. It's not that hard to prepare a little model that adds up all the different things. And if something's included, then you don't fill in that slot.
Right.
If it's included in the base lease, then you don't include it in that slot. But if it's not, then you put the factor down there per square foot. You may actually have some things that would cost you that you would want to add into your spreadsheet. It would be 19 cents a square foot.
Mm-hmm.
It could be that little, but if you get 5 or 6 19-cent things in there, then that adds up to another dollar a square foot.
That's right. It can be quite expensive.
And that's how you decide if you've got two properties that you're looking at, and then you do this little spreadsheet, and that's how you look at the finances.
And there's something else I want you to take a look at. If you have two that are just about the same by the time you wash all the costs out, and you're taking a look at them, go to the two landlords and ask for a few key things to be in the lease that will save you money in the long run. Number one is a kick-out clause.
Yeah.
Can you get out of that lease? This is not like a nice residential lease where the little grandmotherly lady who rented you the room says, "Sure, you can go. I'll find another tenant." This is a landlord who this is his or her livelihood. This is how they make their living. That's not how it's going to happen.
All right, I want to ask you another question about the kickout clause when we come back, and we've got a lot of other questions for Sarah about leases. When we come back, it's 39 after the hour. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. Sarah Calvert is our special guest and our good friend. Stay with us, please. All right, we're back. It's 44 after. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. Thank you very much for joining us. Sarah Calvert is our special guest and our good friend. Sarah is a small business attorney, and if you'd like to join us to ask a question or make a comment, 888-822-8255. I would like to remind you that Jack Carew is going to be joining us in the next hour. Jack is the author of The Mentor, 15 Keys to Success in Sales, Business, and Life. It's been a long time, been about a year since Jack was on to talk about the things, the subjects in his book. We've had him on a couple of times before, or since then, on some other matters. Jack's a good guy, and he's not just an author, folks. This guy has lived the subject matter of his book, and I'm looking forward to having Jack back on. You're going to enjoy hearing from him again. Sarah, we're talking about leases, and talk to us again, a little bit more about the kick-out clause.
Sure. The kick-out,
define that again.
I'm going to say, different people call it different things. I call it a kick-out clause. I like to go to the landlords and say, look, if all heck breaks loose and this business is a total disaster and a failure, what can we do to make it simple for us to get out of it?
Right.
Now, most landlords' instinctive reaction is never. You'll never get out of it.
Right.
But a lot of times, especially in a lease where they're looking at your gross profits, they will allow you, if you fall below a certain amount of gross profits, to pay them a fee to get out. The fee can run anywhere from 1 to 3 to even 5 months rent, but it's a flat fee. You pay it once, and you're out, and you don't have to worry about the fact that the space may or may not be rented for the rest of the remainder of your term.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you're completely responsible until the end of that term.
That's right.
Even if you're not there, even if you've been thrown out, even if you didn't pay, they're going to come after you until they find a tenant.
I've seen people that have actually had to take bankruptcy just over
that's one of the Yeah, one of the most common reasons for bankruptcy is the landlord debt, because they cannot get out of the landlord debt. Especially if, for example, you've got a dying shopping center, and who's this landlord going to rent to first?
Right.
An empty space that doesn't have a lease on it, not yours that does, and you're still on the hook for it.
But, now, if you live in an area where there's not enough space, it's more of a seller's market than a buyer's market,
Then your risk is a lot lower. Yeah.
The landlord has people lined up to take this space. Then don't expect the landlord to be very receptive of a kick-out clause, as Sarah calls it, that benefits you. So that means that you've got to really, really do your homework and make sure that if you sign this lease and start this business, that you know what you're doing and it's the right thing.
Yeah. And the second piece of advice I would have, if you've got one or two different pieces of property that look like they're going to fit your specifications, is to see if you can get away without a personal guarantee. I see it about between 15% and 20% of the time, especially with small landlords as opposed to large commercial landlords. They will allow you to sign your lease under your corporate name, because of course you've incorporated, because you
right.
listened several weeks ago and we talked about that. And have the corporation assume full responsibility for the lease. And if you can walk away without a personal guarantee, then you're not taking that contingent liability on you. You're not taking the chance that your personal credit's going to be ruined if for some weird chance this business does not succeed.
Right. But most savvy landlords are not going to let you
Large get landlords are not going to let you
Especially
get away with that.
Especially if you are a relatively new business.
Yes.
They're going to make you sign individually.
Right. And so as I'm saying, I'm only seeing it between 15 and 20% of the time. Smaller landlords, and sometimes in a very competitive situation where everybody's looking for tenants, you can negotiate one against the other and say, and basically negotiate your way into it.
Okay,
but it's not a common, but it's very, very helpful.
Let's change horses and talk about, we're going to continue to talk about leases, but we're going to talk about leasing from ourselves.
Right.
I do that.
You've got your own corporation. You actually sit down. It doesn't have to be more than a page or two, but you actually sit down and give yourself a lease. And what the lease says is, how long am I going to be here? How much am I going to pay for?
This is where you individually own the real estate.
Right. You own the. It could be your home. It could be your basement. It could be an outbuilding on your piece of property.
Or a regular commercial building.
As long as you own it, your corporation should have a lease in order to pay you rental income. And this is where the triple net gets to be really nice if you're your own landlord.
That's right.
And you wind up paying part of the utilities. For most of us, it's a home office, so we're helping to pay our household utilities by calculating the square footage of the property we're leasing.
This is one of the main reasons, not the main reasons, but one of the really good reasons to go into business for yourself.
Oh yeah, it's really nice to be able to write off a third of those utilities. Our home office was our basement, and it was a third of the house. We have three full levels, and the basement was one as well.
Go ahead. I was just going to say, owning your own building, and I'm not even talking about a home office now.
Right.
That's another subject. But owning your own commercial building that your business is in, maybe buying a duplex and putting your business in one side, or whatever. That is one of the best ways to acquire wealth, and in a small business, it's actually, I've often seen people who were reasonably successful in their business over their life, but they actually their estate was actually worth more because of the real estate they acquired while they were running their business.
Absolutely. As long as you're very good at real estate investment, because commercial real estate, you must understand, is not like residential real estate. It has definite fluctuations and cycles depending on the health of the economy around your business.
But you've got to have a business relationship with your corporation, just like if it were two different people.
Yep, and that also includes the fact that in some areas and locations, your home is not able to be your office.
Right.
Your zoning is not correct.
Let's talk about that when we come back.
Okay.
Sarah, folks, it's 50 After. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. Stay with us. We'll be right back. All right, we're back. It's 54 After. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. And Sarah, we've just got a few minutes left. And Eric tells me we have a caller.
Oh,
who we got?
Okay.
Eric?
Great.
Eric, who we got?
We have John.
Hi, John.
Going, guys?
Hi, John. Say hi to Sarah.
Hi, Sarah.
Hi, John. Welcome.
Hey, I got a question for you.
Go for it.
I wonder if you can help me figure this one out. Now with the internet and even the other mediums with advertising to compete for our advertising dollars, why hasn't the cost of advertising in radio and television gone down? It's steadily gone up. It's as if there's no competition at all. I do not understand it. I must be missing something. Because I'm not going to spend my money, my advertising budget, on something that costs a fortune when I can get the internet much cheaper.
Well, I think there are two different issues there. I mean, your radio is going to be your local market. I mean, you're going to if you only do business on the internet, John, you're going to miss your local people.
Well, you make a good point there. Radio is the only medium that has my local interest.
Well, and also, I really don't think you can compare prices or value that closely with radio and internet. Sarah, what do you think?
Well, I think you're talking about two different types of demographics.
Yeah.
When I do my advertising personally over the internet, I'm spreading grape shot. I'm out there throwing it out, saying anybody out there, is there anybody out there this will stick to?
Right.
And there's such a tremendous amount of places for people to go that you're incredibly diluted. When you pick a radio station or even a radio show, for example, like Jim's, it's to a very specific market. I won't even go into a newspaper because I know that certain newspapers are read by business owners and certain ones aren't.
Right.
But when you go onto a particular radio show, maybe you know that your type of clientele from some demographic work really like country western music. So you're on a type of demographics in your local area where your clients potentially are listening. And that's a lot less of a scattershot, much more aimed, focused. And the more focused you get, the more expensive it gets.
And, John, you're talking about prices going up. If the prices are going up, they really should be based on an increased audience.
Right.
And you should be paying a certain cost per thousand.
Mm-hmm. Well, do you think maybe that'll change in the future where the Internet will have a bigger impact?
I don't know how the internet's going to help you that much. It may be a long time before it helps you locally.
That's okay. What
I'm concerned about. What do you think, Sarah?
What kind of business do you have, John?
Retail music.
Well, there are certain commodities. If everybody can buy a CD for the same amount of, they can purchase it wholesale for the same amount of money, you're going to get into a commodity situation. It's just like office supplies today. A pencil is a pencil is a pencil. An album by a star is the same album, whether it's sold to you by the guy on the street or over the internet or in a different fashion. The question is, where is your market?
At the moment it's local, but I'm telling you, I could make it global if I wanted to.
Absolutely, and there's no reason not to.
Yeah.
See, the thing is, though, that's two different activities, local and global, and you should have a budget for both of those.
Okay,
right.
Fair enough.
Yeah. Yeah.
The important thing to me is that I'm still your hero.
Hey, John, you are, and I appreciate you calling in.
Okay.
Thanks a lot. Stay tuned. All right, Sarah. That was a good call from John.
Yeah.
I appreciate him checking on us. We don't have time to get into anything else before we wrap up. I'm looking forward to having you back again. We still got a little bit to talk about on the leases.
Okay.
A few other things. When you come back, we'll finish up on this and move into another subject.
Sounds great.
Have a good one, Sarah.
All right,
good.
You too.
See you later.
Okay.
Bye-bye. Sarah Calvert, ladies and gentlemen. Got to wrap it up for this hour. Before I go, I want to thank my heroes, small business owners like John, because without your courage, hard work, and devotion to your dreams, America would not be the greatest country in the world. And remember, when opportunity knocks, it doesn't know you've had a bad day. Greet it with a smile. This is Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, and I'll be back in just a few minutes. Sarah.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blassingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.